Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, August 17th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Midland ISD, Academic Improvement Takes a Team. Jones Principal provides detail with help campuses receive. By Stuart Doreen. With all the attention given to new leadership and changes across the district over the last 18 months, Midland ISD leaders made clear the academic performance improvements happened for one reason: what is taking place on campuses across Midland. Teachers are the heroes we are recognizing today, Midland ISD Board President Brian Murray said Tuesday during a press conference about the improved scores MISD received from the Texas Education Agency this week. Nobody gets anything done without teachers doing what they do. Midland ISD is a B-rated district, according to the TEA, the first time for such a rating going back nearly two decades. The district's haul of A and B campuses was the greatest going back more than a decade to 2008, according to Reporter Telegram records, and the number of failing campuses was the lowest going back to 2010. There were eight schools that the TEA reported improved on their respective campus scores by 20 points or more. One of those was Jones Elementary School, a school in Southwest Midland, probably known more for sharing a space with Young Women's Leadership Academy prior to this year than just about anything else. The students and staff at Jones Elementary changed that, making their own mark during the 2021-22 school year. The TEA showed Jones was one of five campuses in Midland ISD to go from being a failing campus in 2019, the last time grades were given to campuses across the state, to a B campus this past year. It takes a team, Jones Elementary School Principal Angie Aaron said. And when we all come together, and when we're all singing from the same sheet of music, that is how we move from an F-rated campus to a B-rated campus. Aaron talked about bringing students, staff, and parents together on the Jones Elementary campus, and she said that everyone had to pay attention about how they talked about themselves. A change of words was part of raising expectations, she said, that students are capable of achieving great success. Better relationship with District Service Center. When Ramsey came to MISD, she turned the former central office on Missouri Avenue to the District Service Center. And on Tuesday, Aaron described what that meant in 2021-22. Aaron said that campus leaders, teachers, and students are receiving the best support they have received in the 27 years she's worked in education. Staff members, even Aaron herself, have coaches to help identify a student's, teacher's, or a principal's strength or weaknesses. And it wasn't a one-time event, Aaron said. I saw it throughout the year, where they would come onto my campus, and I welcomed it, because I want my kids to succeed. Murray later said that he's had multiple principals say the exact same thing, that the District Service Center has brought changes to the support given to campuses. Ramsey said that support is entirely about promoting student growth and better outcomes. That could mean the addition of reading specialists, the identifying of campuses needing additional resources, sometimes in the form of achievement zones, and improved professional development. Increasing the number of tools and intervention would help build capacity at all levels, she said. The proof was in the actions that we saw from the district with them coming on our campus and providing that support, Aaron said. We saw the difference. We saw them on our campuses providing that support for leaders as well as teams. It wasn't a division of this is district and this is the campus, but this is MISD, this is the team, and we're coming together so that our kids can be successful. And we saw the results. The score at Jones improved by 27 points, from 56 to 83. That's not the end result for Jones, Aaron said. We will be an A campus this next year. Biggest improvements at MISD campuses. Idea Travis, 38 points. Houston Collegiate Prep, 36 points. Washington STEM, 27 points. Jones Elementary, 27 points. Pease Communications and Technology, 26 points. Henderson Elementary, 23 points. Bonham Elementary, 22 points. And Bowie Fine Arts, 20 points. This article is entitled Midland Nonprofit Has Staff Retention Issues. Executive Director. Spectrum of Solutions Employees Not Compensated Well for Their Work. By Ben Schaffer. Many organizations around the country dedicated to serving and improving the lives of those with intellectual and developmental disabilities are struggling with funding and staff retention. Spectrum of Solutions in Midland has been witnessing these now common issues. The staff at Spectrum of Solutions is not compensated well for their noble work, according to its executive director. Texas seems to think that a base rate of $8 per hour is an acceptable wage for a direct care employee, executive director Kayla Minchu said. She added that at Spectrum of Solutions, officials try to pay their staff members more, but don't receive the proper reimbursement from the state. We have to heavily rely on fundraising and our local foundations and our supporters to help make up the difference, she said. Some of the fundraising events include a gala, a car show, and a golf tournament. That funding goes directly to support our clients. So that goes to purchasing their food, buying gasoline, paying the utility bill, and then that goes to direct care wages. Those direct care workers are who spend the most time with our clients, Minchu said. Direct care workers make sure their clients are fed, clothed, and take their medicine, as well as a wide range of responsibilities. The nonprofit organization, which serves more than 200 children and adults, is having problems finding and retaining staff, according to Minshew. This issue was here before the pandemic, and the pandemic, it just exacerbated it, she said. Spectrum of Solutions provided the Reporter-Telegram with a fact sheet detailing the shortage of IDD direct care workers in Texas. It states that providers in Texas are seeing a 30% vacancy in group home staff positions. Adding that one of every three homes in the state do not have scheduled staff at any given time. This leads to administrative staff having to fill those roles or direct care workers having to work overtime hours. The fact sheet also lists competition pay that prospective direct care workers take into consideration. HEB pays its workers $15 per hour. Starbucks is $17 per hour. Nursing homes pay $15 to $18 per hour, to name a few, all compared to the $8 per hour, which is Spectrum's base salary through Medicaid. Many providers in Texas have dealt with the harsh reality of drastically low staff numbers. If we aren't able to provide those services, we have to close our doors. So that means selling our properties, that means closing our group homes, and ultimately those clients could end up in a state hospital. They could end up in an institution, they could end up in jail, or they could end up homeless, Minshew said. Although nonprofit organizations like Spectrum are facing trials, there are ways to resolve these issues, according to Minshew. Legislatively, we have been working with our senators and our state representatives to request and push for legislative funding for our programs, she said. Our big ask for the community is to contact State Representative Brooks Landgraf, contact State Representative Tom Craddock, Kel Seliger, and then Kevin Sparks will be our new incoming senator. We want the community to reach out to them. Just tell our story. Tell them what could happen if we don't receive this extra funding. Spectrum of Solutions Board President Clint Williamson remarked that local philanthropy, corporations, and citizens have been generous. They've been very supportive of the organization, especially through our various fundraisers we have throughout the year, the various grant opportunities that all the philanthropic organizations make available to us. We have generous corporate support. So the organization is very well supported through the generosity of many throughout the Permian Basin, he said. He then added a reason why they're seeing struggles when it comes to state funding. There's a heavy focus for many of these services in your higher population areas. A lot of those formulas are set based on population and resources. Our population is not as high as those east of Interstate 35, he said. This article is entitled, Garrity to Run for District 4 on City Council, by Stuart Doreen. Local businessman Jim Garrity will run to represent West Midland on the Midland City Council. The local Domino's Pizza owner filed on Tuesday to put his name on the ballot for District 4. The City of Midland elections on November 8th include mayor and Districts 3 and 4. Garrity and Amy Stretcher Burks have filed to be on the District 4 ballot. The sign-up period to put a name on a local ballot continues through August 22nd. Garrity said in a press release that his priorities start with handling the growth that will take place in Midland. Midland needs to hire and retain more police officers to serve and protect the community, Garrity said. We must have safer streets through improved traffic enforcement. Part of this plan means increasing wages for police so we can maintain a stable and qualified police force and not lose those officers to larger metros. In addition, Midland has been growing and quicker infrastructure development is needed. We need to do more than just maintain our current roads, water, and sewer system. We need to advance upcoming projects and improve them to handle the growth and development of Midland. Garrity pointed to 23 years of building a business with more than 400 employees. His raising a family in Midland, and giving back to local charities as credentials. He said he believes his leadership skills will benefit fellow residents in District 4 and across the city. Garrity grew his 7 Domino's Pizza locations in Midland, Odessa, back in 1999, to now 24 locations in Texas, with his wife Cassie, including all 6 in Midland, 6 in Odessa, 4 in Abilene, and 8 additional locations in other Texas communities. Garrity reported serving on the board of directors of the Breaking Bread Kitchen and the Midland Community Theater, and that he is currently chairman of the Grasslands Estates West Homeowner Association. He and his wife also support the Permian Basin Honor Flight, the Commemorative Air Force, High Sky Wing, St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital, and more, according to a press release. This article is entitled Grande Rebranded as Astound Broadband Stadium by Tim Fisher. The football/soccer stadium at the Scarborough Sports Complex will be known by a different name. Grande Communications Stadium is out, and Astound Broadband Stadium is in. Astound will be the new naming rights sponsor for the football soccer field, which had been known as Grande Communications Stadium since it opened in 2002. It is the first naming rights change at the football soccer stadium. The baseball stadium at the Scarborough Sports Complex has had multiple sponsors, including First American Bank and Security Bank. The current name of the baseball park is Momentum Bank Ballpark. In a press release, Astound Broadband officials stated, "The rebranding comes after the brands RCN, Grande, Wave, Digital West, and Entouch joined forces under the Astound Broadband name earlier this year." Upcoming games at the Astound Broadband Stadium include a scrimmage with Midland High versus El Paso on August 19th and the first home game with Legacy versus Amarillo on August 26th. This article is entitled, "Two Involved in South Midland Shooting Being Held on $2 Million Bond," by Mercedes Cordero. Two people involved in Thursday's shooting in South Midland are each being held on a total bond of $2 million. Isabel Arlene Lozoya, 29, and Caleb Lucas Rodriguez, 21, have each been charged with four counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony. On August 11th, Midland Police Department officers were dispatched to Midland Memorial Hospital in reference to two gunshot victims. During the investigation, it was learned that the incident occurred near the 800 block of South Midkiff Road. The victims were a 29-year-old female and her 2-year-old daughter, both with non-life-threatening injuries, according to a previous Reporter Telegram report. The 29-year-old victim told MPD detectives that she was parked at America's Best Value Inn when she saw Lozoya parked next to her vehicle. An unknown male, later identified as Rodriguez, was sitting in the passenger seat. Lozoya exited her vehicle and hit her hands on the victim's window. The victim then drove out of the parking lot before Lozoya began following her, according to the arrest affidavit. The victim stated she attempted to elude Lozoya and entered an alleyway thinking she has lost her. The victim then stated gunshots were fired at her vehicle and she continued driving and stopped at a gas station. The victim stated she saw blood on her daughter. The 2-year-old sustained a gunshot wound to her face and chest, according to the arrest affidavit. On August 12th, Rodriguez showed up at the Midland Police Department wanting to turn himself in for his involvement in the shooting. He confessed to detectives he was the person who shot at the victim's vehicle, according to the arrest affidavit. Rodriguez stated Lozoya saw the victim's vehicle and told him she had a problem with someone inside it. Rodriguez told detectives he thought someone in the vehicle was, quote, out to get him, unquote, and started shooting. He admitted to not knowing who was in the vehicle, according to the arrest affidavit. Lozoya was arrested Friday on an arrest warrant. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, "Oil Price Closes at 6-Month Low," by Devika Krishnakumar and Sheila Tobin, Bloomberg. Oil settled at the lowest in more than 6 months as traders weighed the prospects for increasing Iranian crude exports with a worsening outlook for global economic growth. West Texas Intermediate futures dropped 3.2% to close below $87 a barrel in another volatile, thinly traded summer session. Talks between Iran and European Union negotiators signal progress toward a renewed nuclear deal that could open the door to crude shipments from the Islamic Republic. The U.S. benchmark already had weakened amid bearish U.S. economic data that included a rapidly cooling manufacturing sector. That followed lower than expected Chinese numbers. Closely watched prompt and future spreads are signaling dwindling concerns about tight oil supplies. The potential for a deal is being priced in, which creates two-way risk for the oil price if a final announcement does come this week, said Craig Earlham, senior market analyst at Oanda. But the primary driver of the weakness, which could keep prices around $90 or lower, is the threat of recession around the world and the Chinese lockdowns. The removal or modification of sanctions on Iran could unleash an additional 1.3 million barrels of daily oil supplies, ING Bank head of commodity strategy Warren Patterson said in an emailed note. Abating worries about tight supplies are being reflected throughout the so-called forward curve. While the market is backwardated, a bullish pattern marked by near-term prices commanding a premium over later-dated ones, the gap has narrowed significantly. The spread between Brent's December 2022 and December 2023 contracts shrank by 8 cents Tuesday to $6.92 a barrel, the lowest since February. Meanwhile, Brent's prompt spread settled 60 cents in backwardation, compared with $2.08 at the start of the month. This article is entitled, Strambler Withdraws Bid from MISD Board Race, by Stuart Doreen. Thierry Strambler has decided to not run for the Midland ISD District 3 seat. Strambler withdrew from the race this week, leaving the race to Tommy Bishop, Reagan Hinojos, and Tim Lurley. I advise you all in District 3 to research these candidates and attend their events and the forums. Find out who has you, the community, and the students, educators, and staff's best interest at heart, Strambler wrote to the Reporter-Telegram. It is time for change. And as we see with the latest MISD news, change is good and can do wonders for the district. God has opened a different door for me to continue to serve, but in a different capacity and an opportunity to serve the youth on a greater spectrum. Elections on November 8th will include MISD Districts 3, 5, and 6, and Midland College Places 1, 2, and 3. The sign-up period to put a name on a local ballot continues through August 22nd. Three Midland College candidates have filed, Steve Kaiser in place 1, Linda Cowden in place 2, and G. Larry Lawrence in place 3. Each are current members of the Midland College Board. All of the Midland College's seats are at-large positions. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, August 17th. Margene Blakemore. Margene Blakemore was born in Fort Worth on April 20th, 1960, and grew up in Midland. Margene moved to San Antonio in 2021 and passed away peacefully on August 12th. She was preceded in death by her mother, Marion Blakemore, father William B. Blakemore II, brother William Blakemore Jr., and sister Virginia Blakemore. Margene is survived by her brothers, James Blakemore, Holly, and Bruce Blakemore, Joan, as well as several nieces and nephews. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that gifts be made to support the following organizations which were close to Margene's heart. Gifts may be made to support Mission Road Ministries at 8706 Mission Road, San Antonio, the Midland Area Multiple Sclerosis Society, or the William B. and Marion Blakemore Memorial Fund at the Permian Basin Area Foundation in Midland. A celebration of life is being planned for a later date. You are invited to sign the guest book at www.porterloring.com. Rachel Ambler. Rachel Mary Christine Ambler, age 54, of Odessa, passed away on August 10th. She was born December 23, 1967, in Castro Valley, California, to Peter William Arthur Ambler and Christine Mary Shaw Ambler. Rachel is survived by her husband, Frank Hunold, father Peter Ambler, mother Christine Ambler, as well as several nieces and nephews. A celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. on Thursday, August 18th at Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home in Odessa. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens. To send family condolences, visit her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Winnie Blansett. Winnie Edine Blansett, age 95, died of natural causes on Saturday, August 13th in Midland. Winnie was born on February 20, 1927, in Santa Ana, Texas, to parents I.E. and Reba Hartman. Winnie is survived by her two sons, Robert Blansett of Austin and Russell Blansett of Midland. She is preceded in death by her husband, Loy Blansett, her daughter, Donna Blansett, and her son, Randy Blansett. A visitation will be held from 1 to 5 p.m. on Thursday, August 18th, at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home in Midland. All are welcome to attend and celebrate Winnie's life. Death Notices. Candace Gargana France. Candace Gargana France of Midland died July 31st in Midland. Celebration of life will be held on August 19th at 3 p.m. at Hope Community Church, 3125 Travis Avenue in Midland. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home. Willie Mae Graves. Willie Mae Graves, 95, of Midland, passed away August 15th. Wake service will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday, August 18th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, August 19th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel, with interment following at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Hi, this is Linda, and I'm reading from the Odessa American. Today is Wednesday, August 17th, 2022. No Bids on Planned New Youth Center by Kim Smith. The future of Ector County's proposed new youth center is up in the air after failing to attract any contractors. Juvenile Probation Director Kevin Mann said county commissioners will soon have to decide if they want to wait to build the new facility or cut features from it. Ector County Purchasing Director Lucy Soto said that not only did the facility fail to attract any contractors, but those contractors who spoke with her informally said there was no way the county can build the facility for the $25 million that it had budgeted. One contractor said the facility would cost at least $35 million, and that estimate wasn't even the highest one, Soto said. The cost of steel, concrete, and other materials are just skyrocketing, she said. This market is something I've never seen before, and I've been in purchasing for 24 years, Soto said. The new facility, which will be built on U.S. 385, is meant to replace the existing 48-year-old center on East Yukon Road. As designed, the building is supposed to address practical issues that arise every day in the current building, but give the staff and stakeholders a better chance at rehabilitating the kids too, Mann said. The facility would increase the number of beds from 48 to 64, have a multi-purpose room, gym, and vocational building. It's also been designed with double the number of day rooms, a library, and multiple courtyards with space for a garden, Mann said. The new facility would help keep kids separate from each other in terms of gender, the type of crime they're accused of committing, and their age. It would also help improve security and privacy issues and give the county a chance to provide more rehabilitative programs, he said. The plan was also to once again house kids who are currently being shipped outside the county to serve their time, Mann said. In October 2020, the county began sending kids who were adjudicated delinquent or violated their probation to other counties to serve their time. Right now, it costs the county $197 per inmate per day to send those kids out of the county, he said. The dream was for kids to be able to stay in Ector County and give their families the ability to visit them more readily. In addition, the county would also be able to bring back an aftercare program for those same kids to help them transition back into the community. In the coming days, Soto said she plans to meet with Mann, architects, and county staff to determine what, if anything, can be done to lower the cost of the project. The county would then likely go out to bid again, but include contractors outside the local area too. I'm really disappointed, Mann said. We had this dream and this vision, and now we're wondering how do we get it there. If it were up to him, Mann said he would like to wait to see if the economy improves so the county can build the facility as designed. If not, Mann said, he suspects the facility would have to be built without the courtyards, some of the extra beds, and other aspects meant to improve the county's rehabilitative efforts. Without the extra beds, Mann said, the county wouldn't be able to bring some of the kids back to Ector County. I'd rather wait for when the market calms down to get what we want and what the community deserves, Mann said. In the end, the decision may end up being taken out of their hands, unfortunately, Mann said. If the county does go out to bid again and the price tag comes back extraordinarily high, the county may be forced to pause the project, he said. Over the last 5 years, an average of roughly 260 kids per year have spent time in the youth center waiting for their cases to be resolved, county statistics show. From 2017 through 2020, another 35 kids per year spent time in the center as part of their sentence or after having violated their probation. Court statistics show the kids usually spend anywhere from 3 weeks to up to 4 months in the facility. Odessa Lynx Conference coming up. Odessa Lynx has set its 9th annual community conference from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. August 25th at the MCM Elegante Hotel, 5200 East University Boulevard. This year, the gathering is called The Power of You, and the featured speaker is Patricia Ann Vasquez. Usually, 100 to 150 people attend. According to the flyer, the purpose of this discussion is to help individuals understand purpose and vision by understanding themselves, their individual talents, and unique contributions to society. Vasquez is the president and co-founder of Star Force USA, a nationally respected company specializing in the design and delivery of organizational, workforce, and community training solutions. She is also COO of Ignite Community Solutions, a nonprofit dedicated to helping create a society in which generational poverty is a thing of the past by utilizing their evidence-based curriculum, ClearPath, the event flyer said. Vasquez has more than 20 years of private and public corporate experience in training, personal development, educational asset, and financial operations. She earned her Master's of Business Administration with honors from the University of the Incarnate Word and is a keynote speaker, consultant, media guest, certified professional coach in personal development, certified public accountant, retired, certified peer support specialist, community servant, and mentor. As an educator and inspirational speaker, she is constantly seeking creative ways to foster dynamic learning environments which promote the proper alignment of purpose, people, and business processes. Vasquez has coached and mentored over 3,000 adults and youth from all avenues of life, to include the unemployed, veterans, the homeless, at-risk youth, cognitive and physically challenged individuals, immigrants, foster youth, and adults, substance abuse, incarcerated and previously incarcerated individuals, the LGBTQIA+ community, and persons suffering from domestic violence, the flyer said. Andrea Kuros is the executive director of Odessa Links, which recently celebrated its 20th anniversary. This is her third time in the role. She has been home for 5 years and decided it was time to find work. She was approached about the executive director's position, interviewed, and was welcomed back. I'm catching on, and I'm so very fortunate that the previous director is a phone call away. I enjoy that. I can call her, and we're good, and she'll help me out, Kuros said. A native of San Antonio, she has been in Odessa since 1991. Kuros has been in nonprofit for 32 years. I kind of feel that I've had a path paved for me. I worked in marketing and in sales and retail. And when I worked at the Odessa Sam's Club, actually I was the second employee hired there, and they invested a lot in me and my marketing, and that kind of introduced me to nonprofits, and I've been involved in nonprofit work ever since, she said. The variety of ways she can help people is what appeals to her about Odessa Link. We're a resource center, and so we get a variety of calls from homelessness, unable to pay their bills. Where can I find a thrift store? Where can I volunteer? You never know what the ask is when you answer our phone and asking the client why they're in the position they're in, and then kind of navigate them to the services that they may need and hope that they help. Then when we call them back in a couple of days to see if they got that assistance, it's rewarding if they got that help, Kuros said. She has had to refresh herself on the services different agencies provide and has attended interagency meetings. I've been out anywhere that I can get where all the agencies are at so I can update myself with the resources, or I send staff to different areas. Wednesday mornings at our staff meetings, we all share that information, who has funding, who doesn't have funding, and changes of programs that are out there. So, and it also helps that we're a United Way agency because I already have 15 agencies that I'm aware of what they do. So that's our first point of contact, Kuros said. She added that the only way the community can be helped nowadays is by agencies working together. Right now, it's difficult with funding. And so if we can help each other out with the different types of resources and talking with each other and communicating. If I do this, you do that, and that's how we can help people, Kuros said. It does get overwhelming at times, but the agencies work together to try to help people. Some of their challenges right now are hotel stays, deposits for housing, and help with evictions. Our local agencies mostly pay for their rent, so they don't get evicted. But here lately, we've been having a lot of evictions, and it's very difficult because a lot of our clients or people that call us, they can only find part-time jobs. They're not able to find full-time jobs. So they're having to work two jobs to make it just to pay their rent and food and all that, she said. Kuros said, Odessa Links ties clients in with Texas Workforce Commission and job fairs. We have two different types of clients, our information referral, but then we also have our Project Hope program, and we house homeless families. It's a self-sufficiency program. Our case manager, she maps out their self-sufficiency plan, Kuros said. They start off by housing them, building credit, and pointing them towards careers, for example. Kuros said, there was a recent client that exited the program after 8 months and was able to save $7,000 and has a career. It's amazing because when they're ready to roll up their sleeves and get to work, go to school, be a parent, to stop that cycle of poverty, they do it, and it's amazing when their eyes light up and finally have that empowerment to do things, Kuros said. Examples like that are what keeps Kuros and those who work with her going. There are times when things get daunting, but I look at more of the reward and just continue doing our job for those that need our help and want our help," Kiro said. She added that right now everything is quiet, but the agencies are overwhelmed. There's a higher turnover rate. You're overwhelmed with so many calls every day, listening to the same thing, getting frustrated because there's no funding to help everyone that's calling, and you tend to kind of be short and not realize this client is still needing guidance and help," Kiro said. She added that they still have to be compassionate with them because they're being tossed around everywhere. Produced water solution nears. Tuesday speakers cite worsening freshwater shortage by Bob Campbell. With so many smart people working on the oil field's produced water dilemma, the answer or answers can't be far away. That was the conclusion of speakers Tuesday at a Produced Water Society seminar at the Horseshoe Arena and Pavilion in Midland, where Texas Railroad Commissioner Jim Wright began the two-day event with a review of his agency's work to quell the earthquakes that have rattled the Permian Basin. "We have seen earthquakes increase as we permitted saltwater disposal wells over places where there were faults," Wright said afterwards. "We've gained a lot of knowledge in a short amount of time, and the earthquakes have abated where we have taken areas of concern with deep injections and put them back into shallow areas." Wright said the economics of making good uses of produced water from fracking for oil and gas deposits instead of pumping it back into the ground are as important as the scientific issues. Asked if produced water can be used for agriculture, he said it seems increasingly feasible to grow non-edible crops, but applying it to edible crops is not yet within reach. "The natural vegetation in the Permian Basin is more conducive to salinity than any area of Texas other than the Gulf Coast," Wright said. "An old rancher once told me that if you put fresh water on mesquite trees, it would kill them." Michael Dunkel, an oil and gas and water management engineer for the Tetra Tech company of Southlake, told the 300 people attending the Tuesday morning session that research into the problem has been nonstop in recent years. "Infrastructure is critical," Dunkel said. "Pipelines will be part of the solution." John Durand, president CEO of Waterbridge Resources in Coppell, moderated a panel discussion among U.S. Department of Energy research engineer Marcus Droven, Mike Hightower of the New Mexico Produced Water Research Consortium, Rusty Smith of the Texas Produced Water Consortium, Laura Capper of the Energy Makers Advisory Group in Houston, former ConocoPhillips executive Karen Work, and Texas Alliance of Energy Producers president Jason Moglen. Droven, part of the DOE's Produced Water Optimization Initiative, said his goal is to develop software and find ways to better manage, treat, and when possible, find beneficial reuses of the salty, chemically contaminated water and to help preserve West Texas's perennially fresh water supply. "First, we need to build a framework," Droven said. "How do we build treatment facilities and how big do we make them? We are not rulemakers. Our goal is to help with the solutions." Explaining that striking a balance among New Mexico's many interested parties is difficult, Hightower jokingly described himself as a marriage counselor for all the entities. "Nobody wants to agree on the technical issues, but we must move forward and do something beneficial," he said. "I think we can work together and do what's needed because we're short of water." Chuckling, Smith quipped, "I guess I'm the marriage counselor of Texas." "We have a report due to the Texas legislature in 2 weeks, trying to figure out how we're going to move forward into the next generation of this challenge that is before us," Smith said. "The state water plan says we will be 7 million acre feet short of water in 50 years, so we're trying to find and develop new water resources wherever we can. An acre foot of water is equivalent to an acre of water a foot deep." Capper said her group is working with multiple technical groups that are involving landowners, while work reported that seeking an answer is the most challenging, most technically complex thing I've ever done. Moglen said, The urgency has been heightened by the most severe drought that West Texas has experienced in 10 years. Titled Navigating the Great Reset, the seminar is also being participated in virtually by 50 to 100 people, said Produced Water Society President Steve Coffey of Fresno, California. America's 900,000 oil and gas wells generate 21 billion barrels of produced water each year, and industry spokesmen say clean water is used for fracking because it gets the best results. With 64 speakers from throughout the nation, the event also had Rob Bryant of B3 Insight from Denver, Nathan Alleman of All Consulting from Tulsa, Kyle Murray of Murray Geo Consulting from Norman, Oklahoma, and Capper talking about feeling the seismic pressure at 1 p.m. Tuesday. The what, where, how, and why of environmental, social, and governments at $100 per barrel oil was taken up by Tuesday afternoon by Kylie White of B3 Insight, Mark Patton of Hydrozonic of Odessa, Brian Baum of the Apache Corporation, and Charlene Lurig of Texas Water Trade from Austin. Midland Mayor Patrick Payton will open today's program and be followed by Rick McCurdy of Select Energy Services from Houston and others discussing produced water role in the circular economy at 8:45 a.m. UTPB Chemical Engineering Professor Ubedar Onyemayobi will be among those reviewing treatment focus, Let's Get Physical, an hour later. The last topic will be treatment focus, chemical concerns from 3:15 to 4:15 today with Steve Wood of the Catawater Group of Companies of Plano, detailing the use of organic chemistry as a pre-process conditioner for produced water treatment. Tanahi Galindo of Geochemica Oil and Gas of Midland, discussing monitoring the corrosive effects of PW and treatment chemicals on frac iron, and Greg Simpson of Pure Line Treatment Systems in Bennettsville, Illinois, explaining ferrite versus chlorine dioxide for sulfide control.
Harmony gets an A. Harmony Public Schools West Texas District received an A rating in the latest accountability ratings issued by the Texas Education Agency. The ratings for districts and campuses are the first to be issued since 2019 due to 2 years of COVID-related pauses. Two Harmony West Texas campuses also received A ratings, with the four other campuses receiving a B rating. According to the TEA, the scores show promising signs of progress in Texas' efforts to catch students up academically. We are extremely proud of our district's performance. The past couple of years have been challenging, but these results showcase the hard work and dedication of our teachers, administrators, and students. West Texas Area Superintendent Dr. Camille Yilmaz said in a news release. The TEA graded schools and districts on three criteria: student achievement, student progress, and how well the school is closing its learning gaps. IDEA Permian Basin receives a B rating for all campuses. IDEA Public Schools has received its rating as reported by the Texas Education Agency A2F accountability ratings. As a district, 109 schools in Texas, or 95% of schools, received an A or B rating, with 31 schools receiving 100% of eligible distinctions. IDEA Permian Basin schools receiving an A and B rating include IDEA Travis Academy, B, IDEA Yukon College Preparatory, B. IDEA Yukon College Preparatory received three distinctions, indicating performance in the state's top 25% among schools with similar demographics in ELA, math, and closing the gaps. IDEA Travis is a partnership school led by IDEA Public Schools and Midland ISD, who collaboratively have transformed Travis Elementary from an F to a B rating over the past 2 years. This year's district ratings highlights include 70 IDEA schools, or 58% of its schools in Texas, received an A letter grade, 40 IDEA schools, or 33% of its schools in Texas, received a B letter grade, 31 IDEA schools, or 27% of its schools in Texas, met all applicable distinctions. All schools in the Permian Basin, San Antonio, and Tarrant County regions received an A or B letter grade. 94% of the class of 2021 graduated college and career ready. 76% of students met AP, IB criterion score in any subject. IDEA also received a distinction for post-secondary readiness as a district for the first time ever. In total, 31 IDEA schools received 100% of all distinctions for which they were eligible. We are very excited about these results from the TEA accountability ratings. Bethany Solis, Executive Director for IDEA Permian Basin, said in a news release, "We are proud of our educators and staff who continue to provide instruction and mentorship for our students." Commissioners to meet about November election. The Ector County Commissioners Court is scheduled to meet at 1:30 p.m. Thursday for a special meeting that will include discussions about November's election and juvenile probation department. The meeting will take place at the Ector County Administration Building Annex, located in room 120 at 1010 East 8th Street in Odessa. The agenda for the special meeting includes three items: to consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve the amended joint election resolution for the general election, the City of Odessa and the Ector County Utility District election to be held November 8, 2022, and possibly a runoff election for the City of Odessa to be held in December 2022, to be contracted with Ector County Election Administrator and authorize the county judge and county commissioners to sign, to consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve amended legal notice of general, the City of Odessa and the Ector County Utility District election, amended Ector County early voting schedule, and amended election day voting centers, and authorize the county judge to sign, to consider, discuss, review, and take any necessary action regarding the proposed 2022-2023 budget for the Juvenile Probation Department, including any adjustments incident thereto. Local News Roundup. Man arrested for hitting relative in head with shovel. A 57-year-old Odessa man was arrested Friday after admitting he hit a relative in the head with a shovel. According to an OPD report, officers received a 911 call about a disturbance on Gulf Avenue around 9 p.m. Friday, and when they arrived, they found a 38-year-old man bleeding from his left ear, which had been cut. Although the injured man declined to say how he had been hurt, Perfecto Mendoza confessed to hitting him with a square head shovel. Mendoza was booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, a Class 1 felony punishable by a prison sentence of 5 years to life. He was released Sunday after posting a $50,000 surety bond. Three children injured in wreck. Three children were taken to Lubbock Monday night following a two-vehicle crash at West University Boulevard and West County Road. According to the OPD, the driver of a Toyota RAV4 was in the left turn lane on northbound West County Road when they failed to yield the right-of-way at West University around 9:30 p.m. and struck a Honda Accord traveling south on West County Road. The driver of the Honda suffered non-life-threatening injuries, but three children were taken to a Lubbock hospital in critical condition. The investigation is ongoing. Quirk Keeps Council from Tax Rate Rise by Kim Smith. Thanks to a quirk in the law, Odessans will not be seeing a property tax rate increase next year after all. During the Odessa City Council's budget workshop late last month, a majority of the council expressed support for a 2-cent property tax rate increase for every $100 of assessed valuation, primarily because they foresee a need to increase salaries for the city's first responders once an ongoing compensation study is completed. However, on Tuesday, Assistant City Manager of Administrative Services Cindy Muncy apologized and told council members she recently discovered there's a quirk in the law that requires 60% of the council, or 5 members, to approve the increase. The informal vote at the workshop was 4-3 in favor, with Mayor Javier Hoven and council members Mark Mata and Denise Swanner opposing it. On Tuesday, council members Steve Thompson, Detra White, and Mary Willis reversed themselves. Council member Tom Sprawls, who was also among the 4 who approved the increase, said he was torn on changing his vote. "We all sat in his chamber and heard the passion that came from the firefighters. We all heard that and we all understand and want to do what we can for them," Sprawls said. "Now we have to make a decision about where we're going to get it. That's what we do. That's the reason we were elected. I don't know if I want to change my vote or not." White, who is not running for re-election, said she could live without a rate increase, but was worried about the burden that will fall on those remaining on the council. "I'm going to follow your lead," White said. The first public hearing on the budget will be held next Tuesday. In other matters, the City Council also discussed the possibility of hiring AP Triton Consulting to study Odessa Fire Rescue and create a strategic plan for the department. According to documents provided to the city, Triton will interview command staff, city officials, union representatives, firefighters, paramedics, and dispatchers as part of the process. In addition, the company will study such things as the community's population, age, and density, and the department's response times, budget, and facilities, and come up with a strategic plan. OFR Chief John Alvarez told the council the study will cost $67,000. But $3,000 will be reimbursed by the county, which will also be included in the study. Hoven and Thompson questioned why the county hasn't agreed to pay a larger share of the cost, given that 30% of the OFR's calls are within unincorporated Ector County. Alvarez said the study will help cement exactly what services county residents are getting from OFR. White agreed. "As of right now, no, we're not being paid near enough for our services to the county. Let's find this data that can help the county make their plans going forward and justify our requirements," White said. Perhaps, White said, county residents will come to realize where their coverage is lacking and communicate their desires to their commissioners. Thompson and Hoven expressed doubt that the county will do anything with the information it receives. "They haven't demonstrated that they're willing to get into the fire rescue business, and they haven't committed any money towards it. So I'm just having a real problem, Chief," Thompson said. "I get it, I really do, but it's just bothering me because we're so far out of whack with our current agreement. I just don't want to step any further into it." City Manager Michael Marrero explained the study as a 3-part study, with $46,000 going toward a community risk assessment study, $16,000 going toward the strategic plan, and $3,000 going to the county study. The mayor said he had several questions about the study and wanted more time to discuss them. For instance, he questioned if some of the questions that would be asked by Triton are also being asked by a company hired to perform a compensation study of all city departments. In the end, the council agreed they would submit any questions they have about the study to Alvarez before placing the matter back on the agenda. The city council also discussed proposed ordinance changes regarding game rooms. Last week, the council asked the city's legal staff to create an ordinance that will eventually lead to the elimination of all game rooms within the city limits. The ordinance will stop the issuance of new business permits for game rooms and prohibit existing game rooms from renewing their licenses once they expire. Although the council initially thought their business permits would expire 1 year after they were issued, they all actually expire on December 31st. Odessa Police Chief Mike Gerke revealed that since June 30th, his officers have searched 7 game rooms, made 6 arrests, and obtained 8 arrest warrants. They've also seized more than $168,000. As a result of that police activity, 9 game rooms have had their business licenses revoked, Gerke said. Willis again expressed her fear that the city will find itself mired in lawsuits if they pass the new ordinance. Although opposed to game rooms, she's worried, she said. As a steward of my city's finances, I do have to be concerned about litigation. I can't say I don't care. I do care, Willis said. City Attorney Natasha Brooks acknowledged that there had been no Texas Supreme Court rulings on such an ordinance, and the city doesn't have any statutory authority to pass such an ordinance. White also asked what will happen if the game rooms continue to operate after their permits expire. Senior Assistant City Attorney Dan Jones said the city would then become very good friends with Ector County District Attorney Dusty Gallivan. The city's legal team was asked to strengthen some of the verbiage in the ordinance and to bring the ordinance back to the council again next week.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.